Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Monday, October 26, 2020. Coming up this hour.
U.S. futures fall as a stimulus deal remains elusive and U.S. COVID infections hit a record.
The virus hits the White House again as the top aide to Mike Pence tests positive.
And the president's chief of staff gives up on containment, saying the U.S. is not going to control the pandemic.
New York and New Jersey COVID cases are at their highest since May, plus skirmishes broke out between supporters and opponents of a pro-Trump parade in New York City. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. The Jets remain winless. The Dodgers beat the Rays to go back ahead in the World Series.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business App.
Good morning, I'm Karen Moscow.
I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by Interactive Brokers. IBKR charges margin loan rates from 0.75% to 1.59%, rates subject to change. Learn more at ibkr.com/compare.
And U.S. futures are falling to start the week. 6:01 on Wall Street. And we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures down 33 points. Dow futures down 273. And NASDAQ futures down 100. The DAX in Germany is down 2.25%. 10-year Treasury up 10/32nds, yield 0.80%. Yield on the 2-year, 0.14%. NYMEX crude oil is down 2.6% at $1.05 at $38.80 a barrel. COMEX gold, little changed, on $1.10. And Nathan.
All right, Karen, thank you. We begin with a coronavirus pandemic that continues to surge. The number of new U.S. infections hit a record for a second straight day at more than 85,000. Deaths are on the rise, too, with another 939 on the campaign trail. President Trump continues to say we're rounding the corner.
They keep talking about cases. You know why we have cases so much? Because that's all we do is test. If we cut our testing down in half, they'd say, well, they wouldn't say that. But cases would go down in it. Now we have the best test, and we are coming around. We're rounding the turn. We have the vaccines. We have everything.
Well, no vaccines yet, but there are several shots in the works, none that have cleared clinical trials. Meantime, five members of Vice President Mike Pence's inner circle, including his chief of staff, Mark Short, have tested positive. White House chief of staff Mark Meadows says the vice president will continue to campaign, telling CNN's State of the Union.
We're not going to control the pandemic. We are going to control the fact that we get vaccines, therapeutics, and other mitigation areas.
Why aren't we going to get control of the pandemic?
Because it is a contagious virus, just like the flu. Yeah,
Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden says that remark that the U.S. won't contain the pandemic wasn't a slip. Former FDA Commissioner Scott Gottlieb says we're at a dangerous tipping point with the virus and deaths will continue to grow without intervention.
We have a moment of opportunity right now to take some forceful steps to try to abate the spread that's underway. But if we don't do that, if we miss this window, this is going to continue to accelerate and it's going to be more difficult to get under control.
Gottlieb spoke on CBS's Face the Nation, heard here on Bloomberg Radio.
And as the pandemic grows, the odds for a stimulus bill from Congress are fading. Let's get the very latest live from Bloomberg's John Tucker. John.
And Karen, a new round of virus relief moved no closer to a resolution after a weekend of talks. Nancy Pelosi says she's waiting for a counteroffer today from the White House. The House Speaker didn't sound all that optimistic on CNN.
They keep moving the goalposts. We want it the sooner the better, and that's why we're making concessions. We're making concessions, too.
White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows appeared earlier on the same program.
We've continued to make offer after offer after offer, and Nancy continues to move the goalposts.
Well, the lack of a weekend deal all but extinguishes the prospects of a stimulus bill being signed into law before the election. John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, John, thank you. In the Senate, a final vote is set today for the president's Supreme Court nominee.
We're moving this nomination forward. And colleagues, by tomorrow night, we'll have a new member of the United States Supreme Court.
Majority Leader Mitch McConnell says confirmation is all but assured, while Democrats like Senator Elizabeth Warren are slamming the GOP for rushing the process.
Confirming Amy Coney Barrett to the nation's highest court is their path to advance an extremist agenda long after the country is fed up and disgusted with their failures.
Sources tell us the White House is considering a possible outdoor event to swear in Barrett tonight after the final confirmation vote.
Election Day is just over a week away, and history says that's good news for stocks. Matt Maley at Miller Tabak says over the last 30 years, the S&P has rallied the week before a presidential election, with one notable exception, 2016. Maley said the average weekly return was 3.8%.
And we have another extremely busy earnings week ahead with plenty of blue-chip tech companies reporting. Let's get a preview now from Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett.
Tech names include Apple, Alphabet, Advanced Micro Devices, Facebook, and Twitter. We'll also be hearing from big industrial companies including GE, 3M, Airbus, Boeing, Ford, Caterpillar, and Honeywell. Tom Plum is Chief Investment Officer and Portfolio Manager at Plum Funds.
What we're really going to see is from the industrials and others what they've seen, what they've been able to do with their business models to cut expenses, to right size, and things like that.
Also on tap this week, energy names such as ExxonMobil, Chevron, and BP, pharmaceuticals including Pfizer, Merck, and Lilly, along with financials such as Credit Suisse, MasterCard, and Visa. Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Charlie, thank you. Another corporate news. A possible deal may be brewing this morning. The parent of coffee and donuts chain Dunkin' is in talks to be acquired by private equity-backed Inspire Brands. According to the New York Times, the deal is valued at $8.8 billion and could be announced today. Inspire Brands owns Buffalo Wild Wings and Jimmy John's.
Germany's Bayer, known as Bayer in the U.S., has agreed to acquire North Carolina-based biotech Asklepios Biopharmaceutical. The sale could fetch as much as $4 billion. Closely held AskBio develops gene therapies for diseases like Parkinson's and congestive heart failure.
More tension between the U.S. and China this morning. Beijing said it'll impose unspecified sanctions on Lockheed Martin, Boeing, and Raytheon Technologies after the U.S. approved an arms sale to Taiwan last week. The State Department agreed to $1.8 billion in new arms for Taiwan and submitted the package to Congress for a final review.
And in Europe, the British government is indicating it's optimistic about a trade deal with the EU. The latest round of Brexit negotiations has been extended to Wednesday after Britain temporarily walked away from talks last week. S&P futures down 36 points now. Dow futures down 289. NASDAQ futures lower by 105 points. This is Bloomberg. And at 6:07 on Wall Street, it's time to check the latest news from New York and around the world with Michael Barr. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo criticized President Trump's chief of staff for saying that the U.S. is not going to control the pandemic and will instead focus on getting vaccines and therapeutics. Cuomo says Trump's approach to the virus has been, don't even try, just surrender.
They have believed from the beginning that they can't control the virus. That's the only rationale that explains the denial and the lying.
New York added 1,632 cases. Meanwhile, New Jersey reported 1,140 new cases. In Newark, Mayor Roz Baraka says the city will begin taking serious measures after saying the city has seen more COVID-19 cases than every other city in Essex County combined. Skirmishes broke out between supporters and opponents of President Trump as a Jews for Trump convoy of cars draped with American flags and Trump 2020 banners rolled through Manhattan and Brooklyn. Videos shared on Twitter showed several protesters pelting the vehicles with eggs or stones. Trump's personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, greeted supporters from the passenger seat of a car driving near Trump Tower during the parade. Police said seven people were arrested in Times Square. The New York Police Department has advised businesses in Midtown Manhattan to brace for election protests. NYPD officials sent a letter to business leaders in Manhattan informing them that they are enacting preparations for Election Day similar to those utilized during major planned events like New Year's Eve. It comes as in-person early voting continues today in New York. The NYPD says it has suspended an officer without pay a day after he was seen on video saying Trump 2020 over a patrol vehicle's loudspeaker, a violation of the department rules. California is seeing some very dangerous fire weather with power shutdowns and dire warnings. Bloomberg's Ed Baxter has the story.
Truth is, nobody can predict 100% how these go, but forecasters are saying winds in the worst locations can gust from 35 to 80 miles per hour, and PG&E and Southern California Edison have shut or are in the process of shutting down what could impact over a million people. This along with stark warnings regarding the potential for having to get out.
Make sure you have all your important documents set aside, an emergency supply kit, anything you'll need to take if you are evacuated.
CAL FIRE's Daniel Berlant says the wind severity will move in region southward and be dangerous into tomorrow. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Global News 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts, more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Michael, thank you. Coming up to 6:10 on Wall Street, time for the Burden Accountants and Advisors Sports Update with John Stashower.
All right, Nathan, World Series Game 5 did not have the drama of Saturday's epic Game 4, but like that one, the Dodgers jumped in front.
Now the pitch. And there's a fly ball to center field. That's well hit way back, Ed. Gone, a home run. Jock Peterson, his second home run of the postseason, and the Dodgers take a 3-0 lead.
Dodgers radio had it. The Rays scored twice, tried to tie the game, but Manny Margot was called out trying to steal home. Max Muncy then homered. L.A. won 4-2 to go up 3-2 in the series. The Dodgers can win their first title in 32 years. Tomorrow night. Moral victory for the Jets. Their 18-10 loss to Buffalo was the closest they've come to winning. They actually scored the game's only touchdown. Six times the Bills settled for a field goal. Jets had a 10-0 lead, their first halftime lead of the season, but their record drops to 0-7. Only team yet to lose, Pittsburgh. Best start since 1978. The Steelers blew most of a 20-point lead, but hung on over previously unbeaten Tennessee. 27-24, the Titans missed a game-time field goal at the end. Seattle's first loss came last night. Arizona rallied to tie, then beat the Seahawks 37-34 in overtime. Kansas City is 6-1. Easy win in the snow in Denver. Le'Veon Bell, released by the Jets, made his Chiefs debut. Green Bay 5-1 with a rout of Houston. Aaron Rodgers, 4 touchdown passes for the Packers. New England blown out by the 49ers 33-6. Bill Belichick's worst home loss ever as Patriots coach. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan?
John, thank you. Risk off. On this Monday morning, S&P futures down 35 points, Dow futures down 281 points, NASDAQ futures down 104 points. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Bloomberg Sports was brought to you by Burden Accountants and Advisors. Uncertain about your financial future? Let Burden serve as your trusted advisor and create innovative solutions to help protect you, your family, and your business. Visit burdenllp.com.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. European stocks and U.S. stock index futures are dropping on signs that the pandemic is continuing to hurt business and doubts that Washington lawmakers will reach an economic stimulus package anytime soon. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures down about 33 points. Dow futures down 271. NASDAQ futures down 90. The DAX in Germany is down 2.1%. The 10-year Treasury up 9/32, yield 0.81%, and the yield on the 2-year 0.14%. NYMEX crude oil is down 2.4% on 96 cents at $38.90 a barrel. COMEX gold is little changed, down 30 cents at $19.04.90 an ounce. The euro, 1.1806 against the dollar. British pound, 1.3051, and the yen, 104.92. We are watching for a report on new home sales at 10 o'clock Wall Street time, and Hasbro is among companies scheduled to report earnings today. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, Senate Republicans shut down a Democratic filibuster on the Amy Coney Barrett Supreme Court nomination, paving a clear path for her final confirmation tonight. The vote was 51-48. Vice President Mike Pence indicates he intends to be in the Senate for Barrett's confirmation vote. Five members of Vice President Mike Pence's inner circle tested positive for COVID-19, including his chief of staff, Mark Short. Marty Oakes also tested positive. Oakes, a longtime political consultant and ally to the vice president, was traveling with him last Monday. Yesterday, Pence campaigned in North Carolina. The Dodgers are a game away from winning the World Series, beating the Rays 4-2 in Game 5. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts, more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael, thank you. It is 6:19 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. And it's not just members of Vice President Mike Pence's inner circle that have come down with the coronavirus. The pandemic is causing new daily infection records for the second straight day in the U.S., more more than 85,000 new cases reported just yesterday. Deaths are on the rise as well. For the very latest on where we stand in tackling the pandemic, we welcome back to our show Amish Adalja, senior scholar at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. Professor, it's always good to get your insights. And when we have case counts rising to record levels like this, what is your biggest concern?
My biggest concern is that those case counts are not going to be limited to uncomplicated cases and young individuals, that they're going to be chains of transmission that get set off, that land on vulnerable populations who require hospitalization, and that we have hospitals, again, in crisis with their resources stressed and having to alter care. And we're already hearing about that in many parts of the country, including the need to build field hospitals and auxiliary sites to take care of patients.
So are you thinking that we could see a repeat of the kind of scenes that we saw in New York City and the surrounding area in the spring, where we could have hospitals surging with coronavirus cases? Is that a real possibility now?
I do think it is. If you look at places like Wisconsin, El Paso, Texas, and Utah, North Dakota, we are seeing major pressure on ICU beds and field hospital construction in El Paso, for example, as well as using military sites to take care of some of these non-COVID patients. They are sort of altering care because they're getting under pressure. And I think that's something that we wanted to avoid. That's what flattening the curve was about, was staying underneath hospital capacity. We knew we couldn't get rid of all the cases, but the fact that these chains of transmission are landing people in the hospital again is something that is really concerning.
Are we in a better spot, though, in terms of personal protective equipment for hospital workers, as well as the kinds of therapeutics that have been approved for emergency use by the FDA?
We definitely are. We've made great efforts to ensure that healthcare workers have personal protective equipment. I myself take care of COVID patients, and I've not had any shortages or issues with personal protective equipment. So that is much better. We do know a lot more about the disease. We have new tools to take care of these patients, like remdesivir, which was just FDA approved last week, dexamethasone, better strategies for how to manage the oxygen. We know the complications a lot better than we did in March. So that's going to help with decreasing the mortality in the hospital, but that doesn't keep people out of the hospital. We don't have some magic way of keeping a vulnerable person from being hospitalized. So that's the issue, is that there's still, even though we're getting better, there's still this risk of people ending up in the hospital and hospitals not being able to cope, because they have very little excess capacity, and these patients are very resource intensive, and we have to continue to vigilantly monitor hospital capacity, because that's sort of what we're trying to gauge everything based upon.
In terms of a national strategy, it does seem now as though the White House is leaning in on the race for therapeutics and vaccines, with this comment yesterday from Chief of Staff Mark Meadows that we're not going to control the pandemic without them. What was your reaction to that comment?
Well, we know from the very beginning that there hasn't been any kind of real effort to control or mitigate this virus, that without a testing strategy, with active disdain of testing, with attacks on experts, that the White House had never really been serious about getting this virus to a level that we could manage a lot better. So they're holding out hope for vaccines and therapeutics, that's important. That is the solution. But it's not as if you do one or the other. It's not a false alternative. They could, part of the solution is to increase diagnostic testing, to have home tests available, to be able to do rapid tests. All of that is part of how we move forward before we have a vaccine. Because you have to remember that although we're making great progress towards a vaccine, it's not going to be available to the general public probably until mid-2021. And we can't continue to have people unable to function or do anything because they're worried about this virus. And the only way that we can fix that is for people to wear face coverings, and that we can do test, trace, isolate, things that countries like Taiwan have done from the very beginning, which we still cannot do 10 months after this virus appeared in the United States.
Only about 30 seconds left here, Professor. Without that kind of robust testing infrastructure in place, are there further mitigations that people can do besides the usual advice that we get from masking, social distancing, that sort of thing?
That's the best thing that we have right now, these very blunt tools. Wearing a mask, trying to avoid congregated or crowded places, staying 6 feet apart as best as you can, washing your hands a lot. That's really all we can offer people until we get something like a strategy like Taiwan. And it's unfortunate because it didn't have to be this way. We didn't have to squander all this time. We didn't have to have the federal government evade what this virus represented. And we should have had the CDC in the driver's seat from the beginning.
Thank you for your insights, Professor. Very much appreciated this morning. Amish Adalja is a senior scholar at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. Futures pointing to a lower open this morning. This is Bloomberg. And it is now 6:25 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by Audi. Don't let someone else drive off in the Audi model you've always wanted. Visit a Tri-State Audi dealer to get behind the wheel of yours today.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130 to Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991 to Boston. Bloomberg 1061 to San Francisco. Bloomberg 960 to the country. Sirius XM Channel 119 and around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 6:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We're just about 3 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. Stocks are dropping as a stimulus deal remains elusive, and U.S. coronavirus infections hit a record for the second straight day. White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows is giving up on containment, telling CNN the U.S. is not going to control the pandemic.
What we have to do is make sure that we fight it with therapeutics and vaccines, take proper mitigation factors in terms of social distancing and mask when we can.
At the same time, the coronavirus is once again hitting the White House. Five members of Vice President Mike Pence's inner circle, including his chief of staff, Mark Short, have tested positive.
And as the pandemic grows, the odds for a stimulus bill from Congress are fading. Let's get the very latest live from Bloomberg's John Tucker. John?
And Nathan, after 3 months of squabbling, aides in both parties say little progress was made in weekend negotiations. The White House chief of staff and Nancy Pelosi both accuse each other of moving the goalposts. The House Speaker says she's now waiting for another counteroffer today from the Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin. John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, John, thank you. Turning to geopolitics now, tensions between the U.S. and China may be heating up. Beijing says it'll impose unspecified sanctions on Lockheed Martin, Boeing, and Raytheon Technologies. This after the U.S. approved an arms sale to Taiwan last week.
In deal news, Germany's Bayer, known as Bayer in the U.S., has agreed to acquire North Carolina-based biotech Asklepios Biopharmaceutical. The sale of AskBio, which develops gene therapies for Parkinson's and congestive heart failure, could fetch as much as $4 billion.
The parent of coffee and donuts chain Dunkin' is in talks to be acquired by Inspire Brands. According to the New York Times, the deal is valued at $8.8 billion and could be announced today. Inspire owns Buffalo Wild Wings and Jimmy John's.
Bankers at UBS will soon see a change in their paycheck. Sources tell us the Swiss bank is raising salaries for some of its senior employees. Bonuses will be cut in exchange for fixed salary gains of as high as 20%. The move is designed to prevent competitors from poaching talent at UBS.
And it's a busy week on the earnings front with Amazon, Apple, Microsoft, and Facebook reporting. Estimates for Amazon predict strong growth, with revenue surging 30% from last year. Analysts also forecast double-digit gains from Microsoft, while estimates for Apple and Facebook are more reserved. We are hearing from Hasbro, with third-quarter profit beating analysts' estimates. Futures this morning are lower. S&P futures down about 32 points. Dow futures down 260. NASDAQ futures down 91. 10-year Treasury up 9/32. Yield 0.81%, and the yield on the two-year 0.14%, the euro 1.1815 against the dollar. Straight ahead, the latest world and national news, and this is Bloomberg.
And thank you, Karen. 6:33 on Wall Street, and this news update is brought to you by the new Land Rover Defender, the toughest and most advanced Land Rover vehicle ever. Test drive the new Land Rover Defender at your local tri-state area Land Rover retailer today. Land Rover, above and beyond. Good morning, Michael Barr.
Good morning, Nathan. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo criticized President Trump's chief of staff for saying that the U.S. is not going to control the pandemic and will instead focus on getting vaccines and therapeutics. Cuomo says Trump just surrendered without firing a shot.
If you believed you could control it, then you try to control it. If you don't believe you can control it, then you lie about it and deny it and you minimize it.
New York added 1,632 cases. Meanwhile, New Jersey reported 1,140 new cases. Skirmishes broke out between supporters and opponents of President Trump as a Jews for Trump convoy of cars rolled through Manhattan and Brooklyn. Videos shared on Twitter showed several protesters pelting the vehicles with eggs or stones. Fears of voter intimidation and civil unrest have prompted authorities in large urban centers to announce unprecedented steps meant to avoid clashes on Election Day and beyond. New York, Chicago, and Philadelphia are among cities that have revealed plans to prevent violence on November 3rd. Election observers worry polling sites could be targeted. The U.S. Senate took its second final step toward putting Amy Coney Barrett back on the Supreme Court, or on the Supreme Court, rather, a move that would seal a 6-3 conservative high court majority. The Senate, on a 51-48 tally yesterday, advanced Barrett's nomination toward a final vote to be held today. Barrett was President Trump's choice to replace the liberal Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who died of cancer on September 18th. Vice President Mike Pence was on the campaign trail in North Carolina Sunday. Pence stood in the rain beside Air Force Two last evening.
North Carolina and America need 4 more years of President Donald Trump in the White House.
Senator Kamala Harris was also busy on the campaign trail. The vice presidential hopeful was in Michigan saying there is a stark contrast between the two candidates on the very basic issue of a workable standard of living.
Joe and I will raise minimum wage to $15 an hour, but we also know that's the floor, not the ceiling.
The number of people casting an early ballot in the presidential election now surpassed those who voted early during all of 2016, more than 58 million. Global News, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Thank you, Michael. It's almost 6:36 on Wall Street. Time for the Burden Accountants and Advisors Sports Update. Here's John Stashower.
All right, Nathan. Clayton Kershaw's postseasons had never matched his regular season success. His record was under 500. He's won twice in this World Series. Last night, the Dodgers staked him to a lead. 2 runs in the first inning. Later, solo home runs from Jock Peterson, Max Muncy. They beat the Rays 4-2. They lead the series 3-2. Kershaw was asked about not being able to try to win the championship tomorrow.
Sitting around 1 win away from a World Series is going to be hard, especially when you've been in the same hotel for 4 weeks now. But, you know, I think we can wait one more day and we'll all be ready to go game 6.
Dodger title would be their first since 1988. The Jets are 0-7. Could this be their worst season ever? They did go 1-15 in 1996. 6 Buffalo field goals, an 18-10 win after the Jets led 10-0. Sam Darnold back after missing 2 games. 2 interceptions, sacked 6 times. Jets only had 2 first downs in the second half. Close games, week 7. Detroit scored a touchdown on the final play for a 1-point win in Atlanta. And Cincinnati, 5 fourth quarter lead changes. Cleveland won on Baker Mayfield's 5th touchdown pass. And last night, Arizona over Seattle in overtime. That's the Seahawks' first loss. Just as Tom Brady threw 4 touchdown passes and led first place Tampa Bay to a win at Las Vegas, his old team, the struggling now 2-4 Patriots, got blown out by the 49ers 33-6. Dallas beaten by Washington 25-3. So if the Giants had held on to that lead last Thursday in Philadelphia, they'd be tied for first right now. Instead, they're in last place. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports.
All right, John, thank you. It's 6:37 on Wall Street.
The following commentary is from Bloomberg Opinion.
Those gales of creative destruction are for real. I'm Justin Fox, a columnist for Bloomberg Opinion. The incorrigibly optimistic National Economic Council director Larry Kudlow recently said he detected gales of creative destruction blowing through the U.S. economy. The phrase, borrowed from economist Joseph Schumpeter, was perhaps an unfortunate word choice for an aide to a president seeking re-election in a recession. But the phenomenon Kudlow was commenting on, a boom in startups, is for real. New businesses are being created this year at the fastest pace since 2006, which is how far back the weekly statistics go. A lot of them are in online retail, which makes sense during a pandemic. This startup boom is a huge change from the last recession, when business formation plummeted, which is a hopeful sign that the aftermath of this downturn won't be the long, painful slog the early 2010s were. I'm Justin Fox. For more opinion, please go to Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPIN Go on the Bloomberg Terminal.
This has been Bloomberg Opinion.
You can hear Bloomberg Opinion commentaries every weekday at this time. Terminal customers can read more at OPIN Go. On the economic front this week, the Commerce Department issues data on third quarter GDP, and the economists say the growth rate could erase second quarter losses, at least on paper. Here with more on the week ahead is Bloomberg's Vinny Del Giudice.
Second quarter GDP dropped a record 31.4% as the pandemic careened across the country, and the third quarter recovery could net it out. But a lot of what was wiped out isn't coming back, and jobless claims are still higher than at any time since the Great Depression. Federal Reserve officials call the outlook uncertain, and the upcoming Conference Board Consumer Confidence Index is expected to signal that. Vinny Del Giudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Vinny, thank you. Shares of SAP are down more than 18%. The German software maker cut its revenue forecast for the full year and expects the pandemic to hurt demand through at least the first half of 2021. Ant Group has set the price for its IPO in Shanghai, paving the way for a blockbuster sale that may give the Chinese fintech a bigger valuation than JP Morgan Chase. Pricing details are expected by tomorrow. Ant will be listed in Hong Kong. Overall, the IPO is on course to surpass Saudi Aramco's record $29 billion offering last year. And Airbnb is splitting its privately held shares ahead of a planned IPO this year. Here with more on that story is Bloomberg's Denise Pellegrini.
This is a two-for-one stock split, effective in shareholder accounts as of this coming Tuesday. And after the split, the shares will be valued at $34.88 apiece. The San Francisco-based rideshare company plans to go public later this year, and this split reduces the per-share price for new investors jumping on board for the IPO. The company has been rocked by the pandemic slowdown in travel, but it's also diversifying and has recently signed a deal with Apple's former design chief. Denise Pellegrini, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Denise, thank you. S&P futures are down 31 points now. Dow futures lower by 264 points. NASDAQ futures a drop of 94 points. This is Bloomberg. Bloomberg Sports is brought to you by Burden Accountants and Advisors. Uncertain about your financial future? Let Burden serve as your trusted advisor and create innovative solutions to help protect you, your family, and your business. Visit BurdenLLP.com.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Watching shares of Hasbro this morning up 1.4% in early trading after third quarter profit beat analyst estimates. Apple planning updates to its AirPod earbuds next year, seeking to capitalize on the success of a product that has become an important source of growth. Futures this morning are falling. S&P futures down about 34 points. Dow futures down 281. NASDAQ futures down 94. The DAX in Germany is down 2.3%. 10-year Treasury up 9/32, yield 0.81%. Yield on the 2-year, 0.14%. NYMEX crude oil is down 2.1% on 82 cents at $39.03 a barrel. COMEX gold little changed, up 50 cents at $19.05.60 an ounce. The euro, 1.1819 against the dollar. British pound, 1.3068. And the yen, 104.84. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, the U.S. Senate took its second to final step toward putting Amy Coney Barrett on the Supreme Court. The move would seal a 6-3 conservative high court majority and capped a swift but bitterly partisan confirmation process. The Senate, on a 51-48 tally on Sunday, advance Coney Barrett's nomination toward a final vote to be held tonight. Meanwhile, Democratic leaders are asking Vice President Pence to stay away from presiding over today's session due to potential health risks after AIDS tested positive for COVID-19. Coney Barrett's confirmation is not in doubt. Pence has not said if he plans to attend, as is customary for landmark votes. The Dodgers are a game away from winning the World Series, beating the Rays 4-2 in Game 5. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries, I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg.
There are 8 days until the election, 49 until the Electoral College meets, and we have the final stretch of the presidential race covered live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. It's a race that could be overshadowed by the coronavirus now, with new cases reaching record levels and an outbreak in Vice President Mike Pence's inner circle, putting new attention on the White House response. Trump campaign senior advisor Corey Lewandowski tells NBC's Meet the Press it is still safe for Pence to campaign.
I am sure he is tested regularly, and he's in the best care of the best physicians in the world at the White House. So I'm sure he'll do what is necessary and what is appropriate.
And even though daily case counts have hit records for two straight days, President Trump says we're rounding the corner with the pandemic. Republican National Committee Chair Ronna McDaniel, who's recovering from COVID herself, agrees.
We have a vaccine on the horizon. There are many, many trials that are in phase three. We're getting closer and closer to that vaccine. Obviously, the testing has ramped up. The therapeutics are working well. Mortality rates are down.
But for Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer,
the Trump administration has failed to address the global pandemic. We're 8 months in, and there's still not a national strategy. Joe Biden and his whole campaign have taken this pandemic seriously.
Whitmer and McDaniel were on Fox News Sunday. And while White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows says the U.S. isn't going to control the pandemic, it needs to focus on therapeutics and vaccines, former FDA Commissioner Scott Gottlieb tells CBS's Face the Nation there are things we can do now.
National mask mandate can be put into place. It doesn't need to be backed up with fines or stringent enforcement. We have other requirements that we expect of a civil society that we enforce with political jawboning leadership. We give people warnings at first. So I think masks are one thing that we could be doing.
Face the Nation, Fox News Sunday, and Meet the Press can be heard every Sunday here on Bloomberg Radio. Let's get more now on this Monday morning. Bloomberg U.S. Politics editor Kathleen Hunter is back with us this morning. And there does, Kate, seem to be a lot of attention now on that comment from the White House Chief of Staff that we're not going to control the pandemic. What kind of potential political impact could a statement like that have when we are starting to see coronavirus cases surge once again?
Well, I think it carries a lot of risk, and I think that we're seeing already Democrats seizing on that remark to try to once again, characterize the Trump administration as careless in its handling of this pandemic. I think that, from the White House's perspective, I think it's a continued attempt to sort of reset expectations ahead of the election. You know, we heard the president after he left the hospital following his own COVID diagnosis several weeks ago, we heard the president, come out and say, not to fear the virus and that, Americans shouldn't be letting the virus dominate their lives. I think that this comment is in keeping with that, trying to say, hey, we're not necessarily going to be able to control the spread of this virus, but we're going to focus on, bringing online therapeutics and, potentially down the road a vaccine. And that's kind of the emphasis is finding ways to beat the virus that don't necessarily, comport with controlling the spread.
Is this going to make it more difficult for the president to focus on some things that he would like to focus on, things like the growth of the economy? We're going to get a third quarter GDP number later on this week, as well as his debate performance from last week.
Yeah, I think that, time and again, we've seen during this campaign season that, when the Trump and his campaign have kind of gotten these opportunities to sort of turn the page on and talk about the types of things they want to talk about, like, in the wake of the debate at the end of last week, where Trump's performance was widely considered to be much better than in his first debate. And the potential to have some additional, assuming it is good news, but some additional, at least decent news on the economy. I think that, we've seen circumstances intervene. A couple weeks ago, it was Trump's own coronavirus diagnosis. Now, over the weekend, we find out that several members of Vice President Mike Pence's inner circle have been diagnosed with coronavirus. We don't know how far that this fresh outbreak is going to spread in the coming days. We're only 8 days out from Election Day. And so it seems like, it seems like in some ways it goes without saying, but we keep seeing the virus issue pop up and become front and center again when it comes to Trump's inner circle.
And even as the coronavirus itself is front and center, chances for a fiscal relief package before Election Day seem to be dwindling by the day. What potential political impact could that have, the fact that we don't have a deal right now?
Well, I think that the fact that we've seen, the White House push so hard to try to get a deal or at least make it seem like stimulus negotiations are still live ahead of the election is evidence of a concern that, not having this additional stimulus could have an adverse effect for, Trump's reelection and for Republicans that are also on the ballot on this coming Tuesday or a week from Tuesday. So I think that, certainly it's problematic for both parties potentially not to have this additional stimulus, which polls indicate Americans by huge majorities support. But I think it's more problematic for Republicans because they're the ones that control the White House and the Senate. And so I think there's a perception that, not doing a stimulus might be more, problematic for Senate Republicans and for the White House. So we'll have to see how that shakes out. But I think that's why we've seen Democrats and Speaker Nancy Pelosi specifically holding fast to their negotiating point.
And finally, a big political event today with a vote, final confirmation vote for Supreme Court nominee Amy Coney Barrett. It seems like it's pretty much a done deal at this point, but Democrats are trying to at least slow the process down.
That's right. So, you know, we've seen Democrats, you know, Republicans had to go, even though the outcome is well known, Republicans had to go through the process yesterday on a party line vote, breaking a Democratic filibuster. That just limits the debate on the nomination to 30 hours. We've seen Democrats through the evening, you know, and into this morning holding the Senate floor and trying to draw this out as long as possible. I think that's a way, while it doesn't change the outcome, I think that's a way for Democrats to underscore once again their opposition, both to this nominee and also to the process, particularly the process by which Republicans have sought to install her this close to an election.
It's going to be interesting to see what potential impact that has on the election. Again, just 8 days away now with early voting well underway. Bloomberg U.S. politics editor Kathleen Hunter, thank you as always. And you can get the very latest on all these stories at Bloomberg.com or on the Bloomberg Terminal. And follow all the latest on Bloomberg Radio in Washington at Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2. Karen.
All right, Nathan, thank you. It's 6:55 on Wall Street. It's time for the Bloomberg NJIT STEM Report. Now, here's what's making news in science, technology, engineering, and math. California's latest blackouts have become another stark reminder of the state's battle with Mother Nature. Brutal winds, fires, and blackouts are the latest blow for a state that's already seen a record 4.1 million acres burn this year. California officials say climate change is bringing more intense and frequent heat waves and droughts, making the state more vulnerable to catastrophic fires. Big technology platforms are calling on new rules from the European Union to protect them from legal liabilities for actively removing hate speech and other harmful content. Platforms like Facebook and YouTube have come under intense scrutiny for failing to do enough to police activity such as hate speech and political disinformation. And Chinese leaders met today to formulate an economic blueprint for the next 5 years. It's expected to emphasize development of semiconductors and other technology at a time when Washington is cutting off access to U.S. technology. President Xi Jinping's government is working to promote self-sustaining growth supported by domestic consumer spending and technology development. And that's the Bloomberg NJIT STEM Report. Futures this morning are moving lower. S&P futures are down about 32 points. Dow futures down 256. NASDAQ futures down 94. The DAX in Germany is down 2.25%. CAC in Paris down 0.6%. And the FTSE 100 is down 0.3%. 10-year Treasury up 0.8. The yield 0.81%. And the yield on the 2-year 0.14%. NYMEX crude oil down 1.8% or 71 cents at $39.14 a barrel. COMEX gold is up $1.10. That's still a little changed at $19.06.30 an ounce. And the euro 1.182. Against the dollar. Bloomberg Surveillance is straight ahead with Tom Keene, Jonathan Farrow, and Lisa Abramowitz. For Nathan Hager, I'm Karen Moscow, and this is Bloomberg.